This is Vatican Radio, and I am Lydia O'Kane. The Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors met in plenary assembly last week, September the 8th to the 11th, focusing their attention on the three key areas of education, a day of prayer, and the Holy Father's motu proprio as a loving mother. The plenary also recognised the importance of digital technology, and the Pontifical Commission has announced it'll be going live with its own website. I spoke to Commission member Gabriel Diliaco from the Philippines about their work.
There are three areas that the plenary thought were very important, and we have highlighted. These are education of leadership in local jurisdictions. The second is the day of prayer, which the Holy Father had approved at a previous plenary, or after a previous plenary. And the third is the recently enforced or put into force motu proprio of the Holy Father as a loving mother, which is about accountability of church leadership. So for the first point on education programs have been conducted over the past 2 years since the commission has been convened. So far, we've had 48 trainings by various members of the commission given to various groups of leadership in the particular jurisdictions all over the world. Many bishops' conferences, many religious orders, and other institutions have had these trainings. And I think the most important point in the educational efforts of the commission is the fact that all of these trainings were requested by the leadership of the local jurisdictions. And why is this important? I believe, speaking for myself, I believe now, that it shows that the people in the local areas on the ground, so to speak, that's a very popular term now, on the ground, are aware of a need for them to know what to do in regard to responding to sexual abuse crisis or problem in the church. So they're aware that there is a problem, they want to know what to do, and in all of our trainings, there's been a sense, so we get reports from the field, that the local leadership has a sense of urgency, of responding in a way that is of a high quality primarily towards the victims, the primary victims of or survivors, if they're already survivors of the abuse, high quality in the response to the secondary victims, family members, communities, etc., and also a high quality response to those who have been accused. So this is very, very encouraging. There may be the impression that because we've been having press releases generally around our plenary assemblies, which occur twice a year, that because nothing might be happening in between because we're quiet with the media in between plenary assemblies. But the fact of the matter is that education programs have been requested by many local jurisdictions and have been underway. And these are not theoretical programs. These are practical training programs, identifying strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, so to speak, to use that paradigm of in management, and of helping these people begin to formulate their own practical systems for safeguarding.
You talked about there that keeping a low profile with regard to having the twice yearly plenary assemblies, and you've been going quietly about your business. But I just wanted to ask you, what do you think that the commission since its founding has really been able to achieve?
Oh, a lot. One is, first, and probably one of the, not the most, but one of the most important things is to raise awareness all over the world about, number one, the need to take a very honest look at and acknowledge the victimization that has been going on. The problem of sexual abuse by church personnel, especially those in position of leadership, is not a new problem. It's been there since the early church. For example, there is a canon in the Didache, which is attributed to the writings of the early apostles and some of the first apostles. It's dated at pre-100 AD. Canon 2.2 has a prohibition against the sexual abuse of minors. And so this is a law, so to speak, that they had written out and discussed and written out and put into or codified for people to follow. The topic of sexual abuse is a very difficult topic for most people to discuss and to even just think about. So raising awareness about the need to do this is a key step in changing the way, which is now highlighted or seen in the church's reactions in the past, but changing the way that individuals respond to this problem of a heinous problem of sexual abuse.
Do you think, that's obviously been one of your goals, and do you think that from what you're seeing that it is being achieved, that it is happening?
Yes, it is. It is being achieved, very much so. And our evidence is that the various conferences and religious orders and even some lay groups have themselves asked for the training. Now, when I say training, people have different ideas of what training means. And this has really been practical training, like an analogy would be like the way maybe development organizations would have training in how to implement, how to design and implement programs that they would use then in communities, which people would follow, and they're very concrete things to do. And they come up with a concrete plan, one-year plan, et cetera. Now, so these trainings have been very concrete, not theoretical, although there are components on the meaning of things and ideas, but the end results have been very practical outcomes. And you've seen this, for example, in the Philippines. Bishops requested for a training, had a three-day workshop that were given by three members of the commission in August of 2015. By February of 2016, there are several outcomes of that. By February of 2016, they published a pastoral exhortation which contained some of the main points of their own guidelines, which I think were probably strengthened further because they were all very practical points. And one of the points there was to full cooperation with civil authorities. It was a no-brainer for them. They recognized that the sexual abuse of minors and vulnerable adults is a crime and that it needs to be dealt with as such. They also recognize that there are pathologies involved and that therapeutic care needs to be made available, but primarily it is a crime. And so their statement is very strong. Also, they, in the Philippines, created a permanent structure for the protection of minors. What I mean by permanent is it is a office within the office of the president of the Bishops' Conference, and they decided that it is something that cannot be removed by any individual bishop. So it's going to stay there, regardless of who is in charge of the, oversees the conference, or who are the bishops who compose the body of the conference. Of course, at a future date, if that office is no longer needed, which would be the ideal outcome, you know, because it's just that the awareness and consciousness and ability to act is already so habitual that there will be no need for such an office, then of course they can decide to release it. But this is another point I wanted to make. With the awareness, following awareness, and this is also a classic advertising model, raise awareness first to generate interest in one's product, and then people try the product, and depending on the quality of the product to satisfy the customer's needs, wants, and the benefits to the customer, then you get a repeat purchase, and the person develops a relationship with your product or brand. You can apply that model here as well, I think. I used to work in an advertising agency before going into psychology. Generally, the expected pattern of awareness raising and then product trial and then forming a relationship and a repeat use of the product is being followed here. And one way to understand this is like how the introduction of the use of the seatbelt for safety in motor vehicles was done and received in the, I think, early 70s worldwide. I remember when I was a child still, we were living in Japan. That's when the first seatbelt law in Japan came about. And initially, no one wanted to wear a seatbelt. They think, why do we need a seatbelt? Especially drivers. I'm a safe driver. I don't need a seatbelt. But anyway, it was made law, and then most of the world, it was also made law in the 70s. People were complaining. Some people were even felt that their driving skills were insulted. After a while of awareness raising, making it part of the law, and then enforcement of consequences took place, the behavior became habitual. And so in a similar manner, of course, there are limits to the analogy. This is how awareness raising, training, and then the different parts of the church practicing safeguarding measures with everyone, including families and children, in schools, in lay communities, will become habitual. And so we want to make sure at the beginning that awareness is raised about and training occurs in things that are high quality. It's like you don't want people to end up settling for a poor quality or the cheapest seatbelt around, you know, because they'll just break in an accident. And so to get that in place, and the fact that many congregations have responded. Also bring me to next, for example, to the day of prayer. Conferences were informed through the Secretariat of State and the various nuncios about the Holy Father's decision to have a day of prayer, and they're encouraged to formulate their own, to put it into their calendar. And many bishops' conferences have responded already. In Australia, they had their service yesterday, which was a secular Child Protection Sunday in Australia. It's an annual day. And so in all the dioceses, they had the service. In the Philippines, they are immediately, they've developed materials, and they're going to make their announcement probably this week about when it's going to be. It'll be soon. In South Africa also. The responses are not simply that they will mention somewhere, but what they're looking at are a liturgy for the Mass in these three conferences, a penitential service in the Philippines, possibly adoration of the Blessed Sacrament to be included. In South Africa, and the announcement has been made there, so I'm confident I can make this announcement, they've decided to dedicate 3 days to the Day of Prayer. Friday, December 2nd, to Sunday, December 4, the second Sunday of Advent. Friday will be observed as a day of fasting. And so it's not only the priests who are going to do the fasting, but the faithful will be asked to do the fasting as well. And then there'll be a penitential vigil on Saturday, and the vigil lasts until midnight. And on Sunday, they have both a statement and a portion, however they decide to do it, in the liturgy that will be read out in all parishes. These are very positive indications that the awareness raising has had an impact. The topic is being taken seriously by people in different parts of the world. And then the third point is the motu proprio. The commission as a whole were very happy with his writing and announcement of the motu proprio as a loving mother. It goes beyond what we proposed to him. It goes beyond the accountability of bishops and broadens it to other church leaders. So it means that the Holy Father and his people who advise him have taken the idea and are taking the idea very seriously. And, you know, it's wonderful. Now, I just want to make a comment about cultural differences. In Asia, maybe with a few exceptions, the tendency is to do things quietly. We don't really go for announcing things. Fanfare of publicity, unless a person is a politician, in which case his or her job requires it professionally. But otherwise, I understand in other parts of the world, constant communication and awareness and updating is necessary. So in line with this, a fourth point also, I guess I said three, now there are four. Coming up with a website, which will go live soon. And that would be a place where people can find out what's been happening and what's going on and what the directions are.